Hey, our guest this week on Radio Labyrinth Presents is an actor and a comedian and a Daily Show correspondent, DJ, author, and renowned prank phone caller. Roy Wood Jr., born in New York City and raised in Birmingham, Alabama, where his morning show would go on to win Large Market Show of the Year from the Alabama Broadcasters Association. We recently spotted him as a guest star on Only Murders in the Building. And you can spot him in person at City Winery in Atlanta on October 10th. Only a few tickets remain, so hurry. You can find that at the City Winery's website. Please welcome Roy Wood Jr.
Just call me Anthony Anderson.
I loved you in Me, Myself, and Irene. So I hear you're a baseball fan. Who you got tonight, Yankees or Red Sox?
Who would I rather see?
Yeah, we can go with that.
Forward?
Yeah.
Is the Yankees, because I believe that Tampa gets more respect when they beat the Yankees.
They're good,
in
though.
Terms of, I mean, they went to the World Series past the Yankees. Was it 2 years ago? Is it a year ago? I don't remember.
Last year,
was it to the ALCS? Yeah. So we already know they're good and they could do it, but I just enjoy seeing the Yankees in pain on the largest stages. And I don't know. Hey, Tampa's dominated that division the entire year, so it's not like it really effing matters.
No, I think it'd be Houston and Tampa, yeah. One or the other, Houston or Tampa. But I want the Braves, man.
My World Series pick at the beginning of the year was Chicago-Milwaukee, was White Sox-Brewers. But the White Sox, there's just so much struggle.
Are they your team, the White Sox?
No, I'm a Cubs guy, but I've enjoyed watching the White. I like any team that just doesn't give a shit. Like their jersey's not buttoned properly. There's gold chains hanging out. They're bat flipping. They're swagging around the bases. Yeah. Like, I like it. Tony La Russa's just for no reason with shades on. Looks like Weekend at Bernie's. You can't tell if he's sleeping on edibles.
Yeah.
I like that team, but you know, like you said, Houston, you know, I don't think it's anybody from the East. If you want to really get deep, it's either Houston or Chicago, as far as I'm concerned. This year's White Sox, when they're healthy, remind me of the 2015 Cubs.
Yes. Where
we were too good to even know. We were just so young, we didn't even know we were this good. And then the next year in 2016, okay, we've been here before. Let's be a little more structured. So it might be the White Sox year next year, but it'd be nice to see them go.
I like the fact that all the good Cubs are not on the Cubs anymore. Well, the ones that were on the, like Anthony Rizzo's on the Yankees now. And I don't know. What am I? I'm babbling.
We just letting y'all bar them. Yeah. Bryant's in the playoffs with the Giants. Rizzo's in with the Yankees. Schwarber with Boston. Mm-hmm. So, they had a little bit of a fire sale. You know, but at least Baez with the Mets is home, so maybe he'll come back to Wrigley. Nothing to do with sit at home and Google stuff.
Roy, you and I were co-workers for a brief amount of time. I work at WSB, and you were on afternoons on KISS FM, right?
You were literally up the hall.
That's right. Were you in studio or were you piped in?
Piped in 75% of the time.
Okay.
But I still enjoy coming to the problem was that when I was doing KISS, I just started at the Daily Show, so they were letting me split time a little bit. But then as the election got crazier and crazier, and then the primaries happened, and like once it was clear that it was going to be Trump versus Hillary, there was no more coming back to Atlanta. Like it had to be all on the satellite box.
It's hard to believe that was only 5 years ago, the craziest election in our adult lives. Probably in our history, certainly for sure. Yeah. Even crazier, I would say that one was crazier than last year because people were allowed to go out and campaign and there were, you know, people were involved. Like last year, you kind of knew what was going to happen. At least I thought I knew what was going to happen. And, you know, and you couldn't go out and do anything like that. It was more down because of the pandemic, but 2016 was insane.
That was chaos that I hope we never go back to.
I hope so too.
Yeah, for sure.
That's not anything that I'm remotely interested in ever returning to, though I do think that midterms will give us a bit of an indicator of how this isn't a word, of how righted the ship has become in terms of political discourse, you know, within an election cycle, because the last midterm happened under Trump. So that was just going to mirror 2016, and that's fine. So was 2020 the anomaly? We'll know that when we see which way 22 trends.
Definitely. We'll see that in Georgia if somehow Herschel Walker just... Anyway, we don't get too political. We don't talk politics too much.
Hey, man. Tommy Tuberville won in Alabama.
Yeah.
He lives in Florida. So, you know, if you're good with a football, you eat forever in the South. You do whatever, restaurant, car dealerships.
We saw you in most recently. We all saw you because we're all loving Only Murders in the Building. But I love this. Do you still have the passion for radio? Do you still love radio? Do you listen?
I miss it. I have a podcast called Roy's Job Fair that I essentially run like a radio show in terms of the structure of the show. It's for people to call in. And I realized over the pandemic, okay, well, what is it that I love the most about radio? And it was the connection to the community. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I have outlets for my sketches and wild, weird ideas, you know, that comedic vessel. But just talking and connecting with regular people, there was a segment we used to do on my morning show when I was still in Birmingham. It was called Who Got That Work? And it was literally just a 9 o'clock hour. If you know of somewhere that's hiring, call the station and tell us. And it was just acoustic job listings.
Yeah.
With the idea that listeners between songs, you just hear job openings. You know, if you're listening to the radio at 9 o'clock in the morning, you're either at work or looking for work. Like, those are the only two. Like, because if you're looking for work, you just woke up. You weren't up at 7:30.
No.
So.
They don't get there till 10. I'll go, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, we have people on. We shoot the breeze. They talk about good jobs, bad jobs, different ways that they can, you know, improve within their respective industries. And I was like, yeah, I want to do this. I still read stupid sponsorship ads as if we have real sponsors within the show. Like, it's the one thing that I hope I could at someday return back to.
Yeah.
Now, conversely, I don't miss prank phone calls. I'll never do them again.
Your calls are funny. I understand why.
I'm retired. No, thank you. There's two reasons. One, I'm 42. Let's start there. Pranks and fooling people and going, I got you. Wasn't that fun? You were angry, which is the essence. And it's funny, but to execute that properly and to do it properly, it is a young man's game.
Yes.
That's why when you watch all these sequels to the Jackass movies, you kind of feel sorry. It makes you like, oh no, they're doing another one. Oh, it's the last one. Thank God. Because you're worried about these guys. You get old and you're like, hey man, you don't have to keep doing that. It's okay. Which is why I love the Impractical Jokers, because they just joke on each other instead of other people. Like, that part of it I've always enjoyed and appreciated. That's thing one. Like, I just don't have the recklessness to do that.
You feel bad for the mark now. I feel bad when I do them. I feel kind of like, oh, maybe. But I just do them to entertain myself.
It's harder to do them just technically, just off of screening your phone call and screening your number. Like, you have to remember, when I started doing prank phone calls in 2001, that was a time where if an unknown number called you, you answered out of curiosity.
Yeah.
The curiosity was enough to get you to answer the phone. And if you didn't answer unlisted numbers, I could get a phone card that would show you a number. Mm-hmm. So there was workarounds. We're in an era now where no one answers a phone call from someone they don't know.
And from people they do know.
I might answer if it's from a zip code that I believe makes money. Like an area code. Right. 212 and 310, that's New York and LA. That might be money. You should answer that phone. 205, not a chance, because it's somebody in Birmingham I don't talk to anymore. Or it's some spam robocall. Here's an update on your car insurance warranty, whatever the hell.
Yeah, you watch Crank Anchors, the newer episodes. I didn't feel like it had the original spirit of the original show. And the same thing with the Jerky Boys. Johnny Brennan put out an album, I think, a year ago in the middle of the pandemic. And I listened to it, and it didn't have that. It wasn't, first of all, for the same reason.
Because we're all older, too.
Yeah.
And then the next generation, they don't even fucking talk on the phone. Their pranks are more video and showing up and doing wild stuff. And
right. Like,
it's next level behavior that I could just never, I could never get. I saw a prank video, and this is like on some bro, you're playing with your life type shit. There was a prank video. It's a couple years old, and I get that it's playing on stereotypes. But it's a guy dressed in some traditional Middle Eastern garb. I'm not going to assign a country because we're not going to. I don't know which country. But if you saw this wardrobe, you would assume this person is from somewhere around the Persian Gulf. So whatever you envision, that's what it is.
Okay.
I didn't put it in your head. The racism was already there.
There's lots of countries to choose from in that area. So
correct. So whatever you think someone from that region looks like is how this person was dressed. And he was running up in public parks and just slinging a black backpack at people and then taking off and running the opposite direction as if he threw a bomb at some and everybody scatters. And you go in the comments of the videos and it's all, ah, ha, 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 you're a racist. If you ran, you think all these people can. Hey, man, listen, you're going to do that in an open carry state?
Yeah. No. Hell no.
And you're going to get what's coming to you.
Yeah, about three steps. That's about it.
Yes. Boom. Yes. So, you know, I can't do that anymore. And that's before we even get into a lot of the things that you say to get people upset. You have to push buttons. And, you know, radio was much wilder, you know, back then. And the other reason, I know that's a long ass first reason, but the other reason is that a lot of people from the prank calls that I've done have died.
Oh.
So, you know, if I called an 80-year-old woman in 2002, chances are she's no longer with us. And so I get emails from the family members of the people that I've prank called, and they tell me how much it meant, and they play the pranks at their funeral.
Oh,
like at the wake or at the repast or whatever. And the prank call becomes this conversation starter for people who have a way to remember their loved one in something positive. So in a weird way, you know, I think that's perfect. I think that's a beautiful, like, I'm never going to top what that was, and I'm never going to have something that's as meaningful like that to people. And I don't say that in an arrogant sense, but it's, you know, I've probably gotten like 7 or 8 emails, you know, over the years. And so those touch me. And I'm just like, you know what? That's an era. That's what it was. Let the youngins be reckless, because that's what being in your 20s is about. Showing up in a crowd full of people and throwing a bag at them as if you were a suicide bomber.
Yeah, no thanks.
That's what your 20s are about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 42, dog. I'm not trying to, no. People are stressed as it is. Could you imagine during COVID calling somebody and going, ha, 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 I was just fake stressing you? Isn't that funny? Do you mind signing this legal waiver so I can air this?
No.
Never.
That's the part you never see on the Impractical Jokers, when they're chasing people down the street trying to get them to sign the waivers so they can show it on TV.
Yeah.
But you young people, you also don't have an affinity for radio. Like, I think that maybe you're right at that edge of maybe it'll go down to like 31 or something like that. But at the edge of people who revere radio, and you grew up in a home where your father was a broadcasting legend. And so I was going to ask you, I mean, it's a weird U-turn or a weird, you know, off turn. But, you know, growing up in a home like that, is that what influenced you to want to be in the radio business?
A little bit, but I would say that. Yes and no. So my father did you know, new, he did hard news and news commentary in the morning. So he would be the guy, you know, WENN News Time, 5:05 a.m. I'm Roy Wood with the news. Today, city council. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then he would spend the afternoon doing a call-in show talking about whatever issues were, you know, affecting the Black community, you know, be it national or bringing a local look to a national story. So, you know, I was around my dad a lot for that. A lot of speaking engagements. I went with them on, and, you know, he was well respected, but, you know, he came up under, it's going to sound weird, but my father came up under a different type of racism. You know, there's still institutional and structural racism. There are still racists, but my father came up in segregation. And so there's a different, he has a different relationship with the type of racism that America served at the time. So his battle was different. So you grow up in Birmingham in a predominantly Black city, predominantly Black school district. The only time I really interacted with white people was when our sports teams played them. So I didn't have a lot, just growing up, just in general, I just grew up in a Black bubble, culturally speaking. So I didn't have the same fire at that time. So Stuart Scott was more of an influence because he was fun. He talked about sports and he talked about it in a verbiage that I could relate to. My father was much very more proper and I'm going to come like this.
Yeah.
That wasn't my style. So I identified more with Stuart Scott, Fred Hickman from CNN SI at the time when CNN still did sports. That was a train wreck. God bless CNN for trying. That was probably a bigger influence. Then once I got into school and I actually started getting into stand-up, when I got out of college and started going around and seeing the country, you're out of that bubble. It started changing how I viewed things and looked at things, and that started affecting how I wanted to do my comedy. And I'm not as prolific and articulate as my father, but I am funnier than him. I'm way funnier than him.
Yeah.
So what's the most efficient way for me to say the prolific thing? Oh, well, I should figure out a way to make it funny. And so then that's when you start opening your eyes to everything that's going on and you start seeing how hidden the racism is versus his time. Then I became as angry as he was. And so then it became, okay, well, how do I, what's the most effective way to structure this and battle this? And, you know, I end up back on the morning show, ironically, at the same station, you know, as my father. But with a different battle, because, you know, my father was, you know, in his, you know, for my living years, from his 60s to his 80s. I'm on the radio co-hosting at 21, 22 years old. By the time I'm hosting the show, I'm not even 30. So it became more of a community outreach style show. And we would play the music and do all of the fun stuff. And, you know, Tom Joyner always called it a party with a purpose.
Yeah.
And so it became, all right, like there was an F5 tornado. This is just as an example. There was an F5 tornado that came through Tuscaloosa, through Alabama in 2011, killed about 50 or 60 people between the two cities. The next morning, we were live from one of the hardest hit neighborhoods in the city and just rallying people to bring, just come bring shit. We weren't even giving you a list. Just we were there before the Red Cross and the National Guard. Like that type of stuff. Like, okay, there's a lot of different ways to enrich your community and give back to your community. And for me, that felt the most effective for me. And then also I'm able to use humor as a bridge with people that may not understand, who may not want to hear a message the way my daddy was giving it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you also still have to permeate and get through to people on the other side, you know? And I think that's the biggest part of it.
when I was reading about him, and I'm sorry, I mean, I don't want to sound too serious, but when I was reading about him, I kept thinking about how come we don't know about him? And I'm specifically talking about me. I've been in radio for 30 years. How come I never heard of him? How come I don't know? How come there isn't a series about him? I mean, because, you know, being in foreign countries, covering wars, discovering Don Cornelius, because Don Cornelius pulled him over when he was a cop.
Yeah.
We don't know anything. Yeah. But I think that's...
Loaned Don Cornelius some of the money to start Soul Train.
Yeah. Growing up in our little bubble up in North Central Pennsylvania mountains, that's the only place we saw black people on TV. I mean, that's just being honest. And, you know, so all of our preconceived notions were based on, you know, two or three sitcoms and, you know, TV shows. And you don't really know until you go out into the world. And when you go out into the world, you realize, oh, shit, there's a lot of stuff we're not taught. And holy shit, why didn't we learn about this? Or why didn't we learn about that? So I appreciate you going into that. But I just think he's, you know, what I read in the interviews, the one in Forbes that I read, it's just fascinating to me from our industry standards. You know, I would love to know more about people. That's all.
I mean, my father was very low key. I think that's really where a lot of it starts, is that, you know, he just did the work and just kept his head down. Like he was like Tim Duncan, like you wouldn't even know it unless there was video proof that he did great things.
Right.
He would never bring it up.
Right.
Never mention it. So, you know, I on the other hand, fuck that. I have social media. Come look at me.
Yeah, I
was rocking with Steve Martin. I was in Better Call Saul. You better mention my shit. Like that.
On the Daily Show, damn it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes.
And before we let you go, can you talk anything at all about Confess Fletch? Have you wrapped filming?
Yeah, we're wrapped. They're in the edit. I was speaking with Greg Mottola a couple of days ago. I'm going to get down there and try and see an edit of it. It was fun. And I think the movie as a whole, and this was kind of a load off my shoulders when I found this out, it's on John Hamm. It was, because, you know, it was interesting. This was the first project, Confess Fletch was the first comedy I've ever worked on where when I'm in a scene, I'm not the one that's carrying the funny in that scene. So it was kind of cool to like, oh, I'm just passing the ball to John Hamm and he's being brilliant and he dunks it. And then the director yells, cut. I'm like, fucking sign me up. But it's definitely funny. It's definitely darker. It is not in any shape, form or fashion an attempt at what Chevy Chase did, which goes back to the old prank call thing. Comedy flavors change, you know, and the type of comedy that people want, that all evolves, man. So I think it's cool that they're doing, you know, a new take on it, but it was great to work on. I know at some point in 22, I don't know anything about the post-production process of movies and all of that shit, but I do know that they definitely are going to sell it and get it out there to the masses. But you know, I played for the listeners who don't know, it's this sequel is based on the book.
Yeah, I've read all the Fletch books, and so, that's the number two book. So it's
okay.
A logical sequel to the Fletch movies,
which they didn't do originally with Chevy. Right. They did a sequel to the first Chevy. First Chevy was a book. Right. Second Chevy was an original screenplay or whatever. So this one sticks to the book, and the book is more paced. The book is more deliberate. It is more surgical in how the story unfolds. And I think it's a perfect thing for this time now, because everybody's obsessed with murder stab documentaries. So let's get some shit out there that has some chuckles in it. Right. We can still solve the murder.
Yeah.
Well, let's try to have a laugh or two here too.
And we can watch Koreans kill each other playing a game on Netflix.
Absolutely.
If you want that yet. Absolutely.
Yeah, the Squid Game. I mean, it's the escalation from Escape Room. You know, so it's all the same. It's all how much do you trust strangers? And it's a great commentary on society. Yep. I trust strangers zero.
Well, Roy, I thank you for getting serious with us. Thank you for talking to us. I hope I didn't bring it down, but I'm just curious. So I asked.
No, this is dope, man. I appreciate you even bringing up my father. That's not something a lot of people talk about, you know, and it's something that at some point I'm going to have to like dig in, and if I don't do it, who's going to do it type shit. So, you know, at some point I'll get around to it.
Make a series, documentary or series. I'm sure that I would watch.
I'll pitch it. You know how you get it on? You pitch it as a show about a guy who turned down a chance to be filthy rich with Don Cornelius because he didn't think black people dancing for an hour was good television. That's literally what he told Don Cornelius. He said, I don't think it's not that he didn't like black. My dad told Don Cornelius, and I quote, nobody wants to watch black people dance for an hour. It's the 60s. And, you know, and when you think about my father coming from, you know, Rhodesian Civil War and covering the Soweto riots and being embedded with black platoons in Vietnam, like there are men who are standing next to my father who were murdered while he was embedded with these units. Like the bullet could have been his. And then you come back to Chicago and you're covering the civil rights movement and the rise of the Black Panthers. And then fucking Don Cornelius knocks on your door and goes, wouldn't it be cool if we was just dancing and grooving for an hour? Get the fuck out of my office, Don. No one's going to watch that. Here's some money because I like you.
Yeah.
But bring me my money back. And Don Cornelius brought my pops his money back in a waiver, and my daddy signed it like a fucking idiot. That's how you get the documentary made.
Well, to answer the question, 8 to 10 year old white kid in North Central Pennsylvania watched it every single weekend because I thought American Bandstand was dorky as shit. I did not like American Bandstand. Roy Wood Jr., your podcast is called again.
It's Roy's Job Fair, and also Atlanta. I'll be at City Winery October 10th. You can go to the City Winery website, grab some tickets, telling jokes. And a new Comedy Central special October 29th on Comedy Central and Paramount Plus.
Nice. Awesome. And you can get citywinery.com/Atlanta. There's still tickets available for the second show, I believe. So if go laugh and have a good night of comedy and wine.
All right. Done deal.
And you can drink beer there or get high outside before you come in. It's all
sneak in an edible. We should have City Edible. That should be the other sister venue.
Maybe someday. A couple of years, Georgia will be in that someday.
You think it'll be a couple of years. That's grow it down there in Tifton next to all the sod farms. Rolling fields of marijuana.
Well, we're the perfect state for it, according to our governor. Roy Wood. I did him for him when he was in the building one day. His guy goes, hey, this guy does you on the radio. And I went up to him. I'm Governor Brian Kemp. He looked at me and he went, I'm Governor Brian. He didn't really have a good sense of humor about it, but it was fun to do anyway. So
it's not, you tried to make a politician chuckle. You should have known that was a fool's errand.
Yes, I did. I made Kasim Reed laugh, so I'm fine with that. Yeah,
exactly. After he like left office and didn't give a damn anymore, that's when he went to laugh on the other side of scandals and drama. I'm sure.
Right. Well, thanks, man. Best of luck with everything. We love you, man, and appreciate you.
We'll do. Talk soon.